Hello and welcome to another edition of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is your host, John Jantz, and my guest today is Scott Ginsberg, although some of you may just know him as the name tag guy, hello, my name is guy, but I got to tell you, he has got a great story. Some of you have heard him before on this podcast, and he's going to share some great ideas with us today about ways to be interesting, and he's also got a new book coming out as well, and I'm hopeful that he will share some information about it too. So welcome, Scott.
Hey, what's happening, John?
So what do you got going on in name tag world? Let's just get an update. I know that by the time people listen to this, this will be a little bit old, but in terms of number of days. But I think it's great for people to hear your story. So have you got the 5 minute, 5 second version of this whole name tag thing, and how many days? And share that with us for you.
All right, I'll give you the 10-second version, and then I'll give you the 1 minute version.
All right.
All right, the 10-second version is, and prepare your stopwatches. I'm the only person in the world who wears a name tag 24/7. I've been doing that for 3,026 days, which is just about 9 years, and I've miraculously made a career of a writer on that topic. There you go. Done.
All right. So if you go to hello, my name is Scott. .blogspot.com, that's your blog.
It's quicker just to go to hellomynameisblog.com.
Okay, hellomynameisblog.com. You'll see the ticker that by the time you listen to this, it will have ticked up several more days at least. But but let's go back to that point that of that obviously wearing a name tag. Okay, that's cool or goofy or sick or you know whatever people's thinking now.
Yeah.
But what has that actually meant or done or how has that manifested into a business?
Well, I think that's the secret that I've been sharing with people for, you know, over 7 years now. You know, I started my company, which is not surprisingly called Hello, My Name is Scott, right out of college, right in 2002. And I had this idea for a book because, you know, I've always been a writer and I sort of have these funny stories of wearing a name tag every day and these adventures. And so I put it into a book. And when the book came out, I got a lot of great media coverage. I don't know how it just sort of happened. It was this sort of remarkable idea that people remember from Seinfeld, although I never stole this idea from Seinfeld. It had this sort of interestingness to it. What happened was I slowly began to understand that a name tag isn't really a name tag. It's a symbol of approachability. It's a symbol of, as I call it, sticking yourself out there. And so what has transpired since then, I continue to write and to explore my expertise and to grow and to start traveling around and sharing my experiences essentially with what does it mean to be approachable, why as business people do we need to be approachable, and what happens when we do. Because essentially, when you are approachable, when you are interesting, when you are sticking yourself out there, you get noticed, you get remembered, and you get business, which is kind of cool. So the amazing thing is not that I wear a name tag every day. The amazing thing is that I've made a career as a writer, speaker, consultant, and entrepreneur out of wearing a name tag.
Well, and I think at least you're my favorite, if not, you know, the world's favorite example of a marketing lesson that I say is not only fundamental, it's just essential that you do this, that you've absolutely, I believe, as a small business owner, have to find a way to differentiate yourself from everybody else that says they are doing what you are doing. And a lot of times that involves, if you want to do it well, or if you want to do it in a way that gets noticed, sticking yourself out there. And I think you've got a great example of that.
You have to. You've got to stick yourself out there. And, you know, when I say stick yourself out there, I mean that in the most non-motivational, you can do it fluffy kind of way. I mean, literally, you stick yourself out there, whether it's with your ideas, with your creativity, with your blog, you know, physically, in person. You know, there's ways you can stick yourself out there.
Well, sure. I mean, it could be the way you I mean, a lot of this stick yourself out there means counter to what everybody else is doing. So in your industry, that may mean packaging differently, pricing differently, guaranteeing differently. It doesn't have to be something that people go, whoa, that is just like so out there.
Right. It doesn't have to be crazy. It's just something you have to sort of ask yourself. There's a key question. You ask yourself, what is it that everybody who does what I do always does? And then you just sort of do the opposite.
Yeah, and or what holds people back from doing that, though? I mean, easy, right?
Right. It sounds easy, but it's not, because you're essentially getting out of your comfort zone, and that's what's challenging for people. And the cool thing about wearing a name tag every day is that essentially, although I've been doing it for 9 years, it forces me to kind of be out of my comfort zone every single day.
Yeah, because I'm sure that you walk into a restaurant some days and somebody goes,
"Oh yeah,
hey idiot, you got a name tag on, right?"
Yeah, I was just at lunch today at this noodle soup place I went to, and I was just getting these weird looks, and I'm sort of used to it, and it's kind of spooky that I have a sixth sense. Yeah. Like I know when, like a half a second before someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, putz, you're wearing a name tag," like. I know it's going to happen. Like I can, it's this intuition. Like I can feel it because it's happened 100,000 times.
Right.
And I share that because the question people have to start asking themselves is, am I sticking myself out there? Am I getting out of my comfort zone enough? I mean, maybe getting out of your comfort zone is blogging every day, putting your thoughts out there, even if you're not sure if they're good or valid. You have to do it because you'd be surprised at the way people respond to it. It's a sort of a willingness to just do it, and it tends to work out pretty well.
Well, and I imagine there are people out there that have said, "Oh man, I can't do that. And then they do it, and they go, "Wow, that was cool. It worked."
It is. It's like when you do the first time you do an interview on the radio, you're all freaked out, and then after the first sentence, it's no big deal. So people have to. You have to kind of muster up that courage to do it, because the cool part is you think back like, "Oh, really? That's what was holding me back? Wow." And now you sort of built some small victories in your confidence arsenal, and then you start to do stuff like that all the time, and it doesn't become a strategy anymore. Now it's a way of being. It's just sort of who you are, and it permeates everything you do, and as a result, people notice it because it's interesting, not because it's different. It's because it's unique.
Well, and I think a little bit of this what holds people back is sort of deep-seated, too.
You
go back to 10 years old and your mom bought you the yellow shirt she thought was really cool, and everybody made fun of you for being the kid in the yellow shirt, and you thought, "Whoa, I'm not going to do anything different anymore."
Yeah, you're sort of tainted, and especially when it happens prior to the age of 18, it tends to run deep in our core for a long time. And you know, I'll admit that I know what that's like, and I got to believe that the first maybe the first year of wearing a name tag, I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I was just getting stared at, made fun of. Like, people would come up and rip it off. Like, people started fights with me because I was wearing a name tag. And I don't drink, so you know it wasn't my fault. But, like, I'd be in college, and it's just unbelievable that apparently some people's sense of self was threatened by a sticker. It just kind of blows me away. And what happens, though, over time is you kind of get used to it, and it kind of becomes part of you, and you realize that it's really not that big of a deal. Our society tends to sort of freak out when there's this dissonance sociologically. But the cool part is, if this is the stuff that nobody really does, that's an opportunity right there. You kind of have to do it, because people do notice this kind of stuff, and if you can support it with some substance after they notice it, you'll win the fans forever.
Well, and that is a great point. I mean, you obviously can't just stick yourself out there in an effort to be so different that people talk about you. I mean, that is half the battle. I mean, I can't tell you how many people have said, "Duct Tape Marketing, what a great name. I had to figure out what that was."
Right.
Well, that's half the battle. You know, but then you absolutely, then there has to be something, not only substance, but I think another real key to success, and I haven't heard you say this before, so I really find this interesting, is that you got to stick with it. You got to believe it. You got to build it. It's got to be something that you know, it can't be, "Hey, here's a new idea this week." I mean, it is, you know, it's so core to you that I'm not going to tell people I've seen you with your shirt off, but I do, but I do know that the name tag is going to be really tough to rip off, even in a fight, because you've had it tattooed on.
I have, and the cool part about having that on me is because I know at any time if someone's giving me a hard time or someone's kind of rips off my name tag, I've done this before in public. I will slowly either open or lower the collar of my shirt, and you should see the looks on people's faces. Like, some people carry some people carry guns, you know, under their shirt. I carry name tags. And if you show that to someone, it's completely unarguable. And that's an important point about being unarguable with your commitment to you know, what your core values are and what your brand is, because people, they look at that and they can't, what are they going to say? And I've had people that were just really negative and sort of lashing out at me for no reason. And then I show them the tattoo and they're like, whoa. And they sort of, they do a 180 and now they're totally cool. And then the next question is, how many of their friends do you think they're going to tell the next day? Oh, yeah. My God, dude, last night, you're not going to believe this guy that I met.
Well, you know, and there is something about it, even if you don't agree with somebody, if you there's something about the you can accept their point of view sometimes if you really do understand that they believe it and that they, you know, it's, they're not kidding around. You know, this is something that they have at their core, and that really is, I think, very, very powerful. And I'm, you know, part of this whole message. But let's, you wrote recently a post, 30 ways to become the most interesting person you know. And so while we're on this kind of this idea or this topic of sticking yourself out there a little bit, I think that's really what was at the essence of this post, is that, you know, sometimes it is enough to just, you know, be more interesting, to not be boring. You know, there are a whole lot of choices out there of businesses we could do business with that are just really boring. And so you know, one of the easiest ways to really stick out or stand out when it comes to your competition is to really focus on this idea of being interesting. Right. So I wondered if you, I just picked a couple of them, of the 30, because we won't have time to probably get to all 30 of them, but I wondered if you could kind of riff on them a little bit.
Yeah, I want to talk about the concept of being interesting, because it's unbelievably simple, yet there's some core, almost sort of scientific, sociological entities behind these ideas that we need to embrace. Because, I mean, you said it perfectly, this nature of being boring, like when you were talking to Seth on that other podcast, I mean, the question I ask people is, how much money is being boring costing you? Mm. The answer is too much. Because we got to understand that boring ideas lose, boring people fade, boring organizations eventually are going to fizzle. So there is this relationship between your success and your level of interestingness. So let's talk a little bit about that.
You bet.
Which ones did you have in mind?
Well, let's just start with the first one, because I think it's sort of provocative.
Right.
Avoid the always, notice the never.
Okay, so there's two words you need. There's an exercise you can do. You take a piece of paper, and on the left you wrote always, on the left column, and on the right you wrote never. And then you think about, let's just say, I don't know, John, give me a name of a small business that you work with a lot. What kind of company?
Oh, what type of industry? Let's say a home remodeling contractor.
Cool. Okay, let's say you're a home remodeling contractor, okay? So on the left you put always. And you think, and this is not your opinion, this is the customers, okay? So you think, all right, so my customers, these homeowners, these family people, okay? What is it in their mind that they would say, like at a party, man, you know, I'm tired of those contractors. Those guys always...
Well, they never show up on time, or they don't clean up the job site, yeah.
Right, right. So, I do this exercise in all of my workshops. Whatever type of group it is, I'll have them discuss. And it's always the same answers, because these people know what their existing stereotypes are. That's part of doing this, is disarming the immediate preoccupation of the people that you work with. So on the left is the always, and then on the right it's the same thing, it's just reversed. So what do they never do? Contractors, they never blah, 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 they never do that. And now you have a list of basically the standard, the norm, the boringness of what people in your industry do. And then the next step is pretty simple. You just do the opposite.
Yeah.
So you have to ask yourself, what are you currently doing that's unpredictable? Because unpredictable, and the concept of predictability, it's very sociological. It's more anthropological in nature. Because if you go back to the caveman days, when you got the caveman out in the prairie hunting for his mate, he's out there, he's got the big, you know, wooden sword or whatever, the spear that he's hunting with, and if he's out there and he's in the prairie and nothing moves, then there's no threat, because if something moves, it's an elephant or it's a jaguar and it's going to kill him, and he has to throw the spear at it to kill it, so there's food. So if there's no movement, then there's no reaction, because there's no threat. So if you do the opposite, you realize, well, if there is movement, then you have to pay attention. This is where the human attention span comes from. And all of this sort of comes together in the concept of predictability. If they're sort of see the same things all the time, they're not going to pay attention. So you have to break people's patterns and be unpredictable. And if you do that, you immediately become twice as interesting.
Yeah, and so that can fold into, I mean, this doesn't have to just be the overarching strategy. I mean, you can just have a different way to react when somebody calls. And as the contractor, instead of jumping in the truck with your tape measure, you have a whole different process maybe they come to your place first or something.
There are so many different ways that we can differentiate. We can differentiate through our answers.
Right.
The way that we answer a question. I mean, here's a good example. Anytime somebody asks me a question, I usually respond by, well, it depends on how you define the word blank, because I'm a writer and I'm a wordsmith. So I think that one of the examples, through your answers, through your service, through your questions, through your philosophy. I mean, that's another huge way that all small business people can market their uniqueness and begin to exert their distinctiveness is their philosophy, not your mission statement, not your corporate vision crap. I'm talking about who you are, what you believe, and how you incorporate those core values into the way that you serve people. That is a philosophy, and that is what makes people want to come back, because you're not just some regular contractor, for example. He's got these five things that he practices. It's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And generally speaking, if people are out there saying that, then price moves down the list too.
Yeah, because if we can find our way to sell value before price, if we can sell our philosophy, sell who we are as people, our coolness, as I call it, being that guy, we can do that first. Price isn't an issue because they've already bought into all these valuable factors, and it's like, oh, $100, $300, cool, let's do it.
All right, I need to move on to one. Be a smoking hot piece of brain candy. You knew I was going to pick that one, didn't you?
Well, it's because you happen to be quite a smoking hot piece of brain candy, if I may say so, John.
Well, I'm blushing, but fortunately right. The audience can't see that.
Well, not that there's anything wrong with that. But I came up with this concept last year. And I read a really cool book by De Bono. It's called How to Have a Beautiful Mind. And like the title alone of that book, I said, I got to get this. And the concept of being brain candy, I did some a little bit of research, and yes, you can do research on this topic, because I had to do sort of some Urban Dictionary browsing.
Yeah.
And eye candy, we watch E! Hollywood News, we know what eye candy is, we've seen Jessica Simpson enough. Eye candy is actually defined as high visual appeal with limited substance. That's the actual definition. So.
Right.
We need to learn how to become brain candy. We need to learn how to become someone that has what's called, Edward De Bono calls it, psychological attractiveness. Now, I'm not talking about being good-looking. I'm talking about being attractive.
Mm-hmm.
That's approachable. That's what it is about being interesting, because if you're a smoking hot piece of brain candy, you have tremendous substance. And the cool part is, if you're someone who is a piece of brain candy, and I'll share some examples in just a sec, as opposed to, looking great, as opposed to, being beautiful in the typical term, if your business, if yourself, your brain, if your brain candy, it's enduring, I mean, it lasts forever, it's attractive, it's equitable, because you can always become more beautiful, with your, essentially, your psychological attractiveness. And it's marketable, it's memorable, and these are the people you want to hang out with. Like, I made a list. This was, I posted this, I think, the end of last year. And I had the top 20 smoking hot pieces of brain candy. And some of these are good friends or mentors of mine. Some of these people just I happen to know. Some of these are people that I just admire. Like, Seth Godin was up there. Seth Godin is the most smoking hot piece of brain candy I've ever laid my eyes on. And you think about these people, and you're like, well, what are the characteristics? What do they do? Well, it's about the way they think. It's about their vocabulary. It's about the questions they ask. And I think there's some practices we can put in place to sort of make that our goal. How can I become a more smoking hot piece of brain candy? What questions could I ask my customers that would blow them away and they would think, man, I did not, that's a good, let me think about it. That's a good question. I mean, if you do that, you've just controlled the conversation. You've just differentiated yourself from everyone else out there. So whether it's with your questions or whether it's whatever you do, we can become this psychologically attractive person and, Jessica Simpson, eat your heart out.
Well, and I would suggest, without trying to get us too far down this path, but I would suggest for the types of people that the types of customers that a lot of small businesses are trying to attract, there actually becomes a physical attractiveness to this confidence that I think comes about from this brain attractiveness you're talking about. So I think ironically, it actually makes you better looking. How's that?
It does. It's because of all the enduring facets of being psychologically attractive. But the cool part is it becomes this sort of external beauty, but it's a little bit more natural and there's a lot less makeup.
All right, be radically honest. That's got to be one that I think a lot of people on the surface say, well, yeah, okay, I understand that. But boy, you get into business sometimes, a little hard to practice, isn't it?
It is. There's a book that I would recommend every single person in the world reads. It's called Radical Honesty. It's written by Brad Blanton. This book blew me away, and it's exactly what you think it is. It's not about being a jerk. It's about, and honesty isn't just telling the truth. Honesty, it's about honoring your truth as a person and honoring other people's truth. And I think the advantage of being radically honest is that nobody expects it, because we live in such a low trust, high dishonesty culture, and a lot of that comes from the top. It comes from our past leaders, business, political, or otherwise, and it's just the nature of our culture where people are sort of on these eggshells and they're sort of precariously walking around because they're tired of being lied to. So it's kind of consistent with that first one about avoid the always, notice the never, because people just don't tell the truth. And when you do this, it's almost unexpectedly amazing how people react to it. And I'll give you a good example. I got an email, I guess Wednesday of this week, and there's an organization that wanted to hire me to do a workshop for their salespeople, and I was like, cool, it sounds great, I'd love to talk about it. And she said, the topic that we want to focus on is time management. And I said, okay. And so, our salespeople, they have troubling organizing their days, time management, all this kind of stuff. I said that sounds like something that's going to be real helpful for them. Why did you call me? And she was like, I wanted to have you come speak. I said, yeah, I know, but I speak about approachability. You need a time management expert. And I gave her an email. I said, here's three friends of mine that are fantastic speakers. They all have their own sort of philosophy on time management. Why don't you call all of them? And she was like, oh, my God, wow, thank you. And she was, she said, I appreciate your honesty. And the lesson to be learned within this example is, even when you say no, you're still marketing. This is an example of it's a radically honest thing. And the cool part is you can be radically honest in that sort of venue, and you still position yourself as a resource. So I'm confident that maybe next year or, a couple of years down the road, she's going to say, I remember that one guy, Scott, he was the wrong fit, and he said no and gave us that guy, Shelley, he was really fantastic. Let's call him again. We appreciated his integrity. That's what people notice. That's what's interesting. Radically honest.
Well, and from a practical standpoint, a lot of times we need to be saying no to business we can't really do a very good job with anyway, because, what's the upside, right? You're going to go out and spend weeks trying to research time management so you can give a good speech about it, and then you really won't be very good anyway, right?
Right. Why improve your weaknesses? Right. Give someone who's got that as a strength and maintain your integrity and consistency, and they'll come back when they're ready for you.
So let's do one more. Create points of dissonance.
Okay. I talked a little bit about this earlier, kind of sociologically, anthropologically. And this is something, I guess, everything that I've sort of been able to do and to become in the past 9 years of wearing a name tag is, I sort of just do stuff. I'm a very impatient person by nature, and when I say that, I don't mean like I get mad when people cut me off in traffic. But what I mean is, I just go. I don't feel the need to get permission to do stuff. I just do it. So over the years, I've just done stuff, and now I have to sort of look back and say, okay, I've been doing this for 9 years. And why did this happen? And in terms of a philosophy, it's orthoproxy. It's about the right practices. And the practice I've learned for the point of dissonance, as it's called, is in marketing, you have to create this moment, this point, whether it's in a conversation, on a blog, wherever, where someone has to stop and look up and go, huh? See, most people in marketing say, we got to get the aha moment. Yes, but later. The first thing you need to do is get people to say, what? Because curiosity is a natural motivator of human engagement. So when someone's curious, that makes you more approachable because they sort of have to come up to you and find out. So the huh comes first. And that's sort of, as we talked about earlier, kind of the shtick, kind of grab their attention. And then you would explain kind of what the deal is or what the product is or what the message is. And then comes the, oh. So it's a three-step process. It's huh? And then you explain the value statement, and then they go, oh. And I'll give you a great example that's got nothing to do with me. There's a guy named John Moore. He's a consultant, speaker, writer. He's fantastic. And I had heard about him a few years ago because someone emailed me and said, dude, you got to check out this guy's blog. He wears a lab coat whenever he goes to conferences and whenever he travels around for his work. And I said, cool, is he a doctor? They go, no, check it out. And I go, all right. So I look at the picture of this guy, and here's this this sort of regular-looking guy. He's got a lab coat on. And so sort of at first sight, you think, all right, he's a doctor of some sort. And that's what people think. And, he wears a lab coat all the time, and they sort of come up to him, and they say, are you a doctor? And if you look closely on the embroidery on his lab coat, it says John Moore, Brand Autopsy Marketing Practice.
Yeah, I've seen John, and over the years he was an early on blogger that networked with, and I'm familiar with his, and that's certainly an interruption that gets people's attention. Absolutely,
it is, and you don't have to wear a name tag every day, you don't have to wear a lab coat, but you have to find some way, even if it's as simple as, so what do you do? Because we get that question 100 times a day, and you know what? People don't care what you do. They don't. They're asking to be nice. They do not care what you do. They do not care about you. However, you can call their bluff. When they say, what do? You can answer in a way that makes them go, really? Because now they do care.
Yeah.
So let's say you're a construction worker, a contractor. And someone says, so James, what do? You say, you could say, I make families' dreams come true. Or, I hammer things all day. Or whatever you want to use. You can come up with a sentence. You can come up with a response that make people go, huh?
Yeah,
and
we
need to explain it.
We actually have a process. We call it your talking logo. And that's exactly what we do in Duct Tape Marketing, is answer what you do for a living. And that's your talking logo. And so I'll give you another example. That when somebody asks a Duct Tape Marketing coach what they do for a living, they say, I install marketing systems. And it's not terribly sexy, but it does have the impact of somebody saying, really? Tell me more about that, because I need a marketing system, and I've never heard a marketing person talking about installing it.
That's part of it.
And that so you kind of have that, the what we call the talking logo, that forces them to say, really, tell me more, as opposed to saying, if I say, I'm a marketing consultant, it's like, oh, yeah, I got one of those. I know what that is.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's what everyone says. And it's, it's this point of dissonance where you could say, well, I work with individuals and organizations. No one cares. You have 2 seconds. Two seconds. And you make a good point, John, about the odd juxtaposition of unrelated words.
Yeah.
And that's always a great way to set it up. Because like a lot of people, if they'll ask me about, so you do consulting and coaching too? And you say, yeah, I'm a writing coach. And now that, for most people, unless you're a writer, is like, you're a writing coach?
Yeah.
Like horses? I'm like, no, writing. Because you wouldn't think you would coach someone to write, but a lot of my clients are writers. So you have it right there, the talking logo. You know what? I'm writing that down.
Well, it's on page 187 of Duct Tape Marketing, if you want.
Okay, I'll go get my book then.
Well, you probably just have highlighted so much of it that you missed that part somehow.
It's possible.
Hey, tell me about your new book that's coming out you said showed up in its shiny new wrapper.
Oh, man. You work so hard on a book, and as a writer, your books are your babies. So when I get my copies of the book, like it's just the greatest feeling in the world. And so the first thing I do when I open the box is I take one out and I smell it. because I don't know, I like smelling things. What can I say? And it smells great. Anyway,
well, there's something about that fresh ink on paper.
You know,
that we'll never be able to recreate in our iPod reading. But that's another story.
It's the smell of accomplishment, and I worked real hard on it, and I'm excited because this is my eighth book, and it's essentially a combination of my previous seven books, but on steroids. So I'll tell you a little bit about it.
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you how the book came about, because this is kind of cool. Last summer, I think it was last summer, maybe it was last spring, Quentin Tarantino came out with a movie. It was called Grindhouse, and it was a double feature. It had Death Proof and then Hard to Kill. It was these two movies. There was a zombie movie, and then there was like an action movie, one with Kurt Russell. It was cool, and it was a double feature, so you pay, $8, and you sit there for 3 hours. It's two movies. And apparently they used to do that back in the day, way before my time, and no one really does that anymore. So in and of itself, it was a cool sort of marketing tip, and then the movies were great also. But I walked out of that movie, and I thought, a double feature. I wonder if anyone's ever done a double feature book. Two books in one, somehow related. And I thought, that's what I'm going to do. So I wanted to write a book, a marketing book, about all the stuff I've learned of how I've miraculously made a career out of wearing a name tag. And the philosophy I had behind Stick Yourself Out There was, well, if you stick yourself out there, if you do these different practices and strategies, what happens is you start to get them to come to you. And by them, I mean customers, clients,
sure,
opportunities, the media, also very important. And it becomes, that's what approachability is, that, they're coming to you. It's this sort of two-way street. So I took all the best stuff I had about marketing and branding and a lot of entrepreneurial ideas, and I put them together. And essentially, I have what I've sort of coined as a flip-flop book. And in business nonfiction, I'm pretty sure it's never been done before. I know some kids' books have done it, but essentially, it's a hardcover book, and it's two books in one. And the first book, book number one, is called Stick Yourself Out There. So you read, I think it's like 110 pages, 130 pages of how to do this, the concept of sticking yourself out there. And then halfway through the book, there's instructions in the middle of the book that says, stop right now, flip this book over. So you flip it over 180 degrees, and then you read the second book, which is called Get Them to Come to You. And you talk about the process of approachability and of attraction from a marketing standpoint. And then the cool part is when the book's done, you flip it 90 degrees, and you actually read it sort of horizontally, and the book finishes in the middle. Awesome.
I absolutely guarantee you, I haven't seen a book like that. So, again, another way of differentiating yourself, a whole new
right,
concept of how a book is consumed.
Yeah, no one's seen the book yet because I literally just got it. Like, the only person that saw it was my girlfriend. So, I haven't really seen reactions to it yet, but I know I already got to believe that when people see a book like this, they're going to flip it over and say, whoa, wait, there's two covers on it. I'm like, that's right. There is no back cover. It's two books in one. And it's really, you understand it's labeled accordingly, so you know book one, book two. But people can't not show that to somebody.
And where's somebody listening to this going to be able to pick this up, Scott?
It's on Amazon. It's on nametagtv.com. It's on hellomynameisscott.com. I mean, it's all over there. You can buy it online. And I haven't done officially launching yet. It's kind of a soft launch for now, but it's going to, I'm doing a lot of media coverage and doing some interviews. So you'll probably read about it, on various, publications. And it's killer. And it's, consistent with what we've talked about today, John. It's not just the shtick of, it's two books in one. That's kind of clever. Yeah. But the content is unbelievable. And I'm not just saying that because I wrote it. I'm saying that because this is the best stuff I got. And this is not stuff that I've done. This is stuff I've learned, and this is stuff that works. And if you want to get noticed, get remembered, and get business, if you want to become the most interesting person you know, if you want to become the most interesting company in your industry, the practices in this book will help you do that.
Well, Scott, we have run kind of long for my normal episode here, but I could go on for a long time with you. You really have such great things to share, and you're so willing to share and generous, and I know we'll do it again.
It is my pleasure. And also, John, I forgot to mention, every time I do an interview, I like to offer all the listeners a special resource, just because, I wish we had more time too. Mm-hmm. So if you want, like, because when you post the podcast, for the people listening, I have a list called 99 ways to think like an entrepreneur even if you aren't, and it's just a real simple list of some excellent strategies. If you want to copy a list, just send me an email, and then I'll send you a copy of the list, and I'll tell you where to get a hold of it. And it's a great resource to thank you for listening in.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'll actually have that link in the show notes as well for people listening if they want to come get it too. So, always great to visit with you, and I'm certain we will visit again soon, my friend.
Cool, man. Go Cardinals.